This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money here on VSIN. Dave Ross in today with Amal Shaw. Got the boys back together. Amal, great to hang out with you for the next 3 hours. And you already know, because you know me well, this British Open going, we say British Open, they just call it the Open.
Right.
It's a little snobbery there. Like, because I think, like, they're like, dude, like, you have your American U.S. Open. This is the real Open. Amal, this is the real Open. Like, this is, it's a grind right now. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. There's a lot of big names are right there on the precipice of missing the cut. And as we come on the air today to begin Sharp Money, we're going to have Wes Reynolds at some point throughout this show here. We'll get his thoughts, certainly, on the day of what's going on overseas. But Scottie Scheffler, this is world number one, is coming up on 18, and he just hit his second shot on 18 into the bunker, greenside bunker. He's got to get up and down. When nobody gets up and down from these bunkers, or Amal Shaw, he's going to miss the cut. You could have gotten a really pretty penny before the week began to predict that Scottie Scheffler not only wouldn't win, but might not be around for the weekend.
No question about it. I mean, when you looked at it yesterday, where he started out and to where he's at right now, you would not have expected this. But, Dave, more importantly, mm-hmm. I'm impressed with the fact that we didn't start out with Dallas Cowboys talk for 3 hours. I'm glad the Open Championship is going on, so at least we were able to deviate from your third-place Dallas Cowboys in the NFC. So.
Wait. Third place? Oh, by the way, we will get a lot of Cowboys talk.
Third in the NFC.
Third in the NFC. That is just blasphemous.
Don't worry, Amal. I told him he can have as much time as he wants to talk about the Cowboys.
That's fair. Hey, don't worry. The great thing about the Cowboys, they're like the Yankees. Either you love them or hate them. There's no in-between. Right? Nobody's ever like, you know, the Cowboys are okay, but...
You got to have an opinion on them.
It's the three. It's the Cowboys, Yankees, and Lakers. You are fans or you... despise them. Like I'm all said, I never heard anyone say, I don't mind the Lakers.
Well, you know what, though? I do hate the Yankees as a Metropolitan fan. There is a bit of I don't care about the Laker thing, because in the 80s, if you remember, if you're old like me, it was Lakers-Celtics, right?
Yeah.
Every year.
Yeah.
So it was Lakers. So as a Philadelphia 76er fan, a Dr. J fan growing up, I was literally ambivalent. I was like, this is like the Hatfields and McCoys. I don't know who to root for. In this war of two teams that I don't like, the Celtics or the Lakers, I had a lot of that in the 80s. But now I find myself rooting against the Lakers because they feel like a super team every year with LeBron and AD. We'll certainly get to some of that talk. You mentioned the Cowboys, though, Amal. Really, for everybody in the nation's capital, and I worked in that industry for 18 years there in D.C., it does feel like today is a day where everybody is exhaling. Everybody is celebrating. It is official. Dan Snyder is no longer the owner of the Washington Commanders. Talked to Rick Doc Walker, of course, won a Super Bowl in the 80s with Joe Gibbs. There's talk now they might switch the team name again. I don't know how this is, and we'll talk about the NFC East in earnest here, certainly from a gambling perspective. But I do wonder if the players now can exhale as well. And they feel like, you know what, normally stuff that happens off the field doesn't affect us on the field. I do think there might be a bit of a liberating effect with Dan Snyder out.
Well, I would agree with you completely. Think about this. We saw a similar situation in Los Angeles with the Clippers. Once Steve Ballmer took over, different dynamic. There was an excitement and a level that wasn't there previously with the Clippers. You see them in contention. They're acquiring players. I mean, the Washington Redskins Commanders.
It could be again. You don't know.
I mean, they've got a ton of history, tremendous success. You know, Joe Gibbs. I don't know how he's never in the conversation among greatest coaches of all time. Three Super Bowls in 9 years with three different quarterbacks.
Absolutely.
So I think this is good news for the National Football League. And overall, I think it'll be a good thing for the NFC East and the NFC.
I will tell you this. We know now that Dan Snyder has been fined an additional $60 million after an independent investigation concluded he sexually harassed a team employee and that the team withheld revenue from the NFL. So the Snyder era, it's official. And I will tell you, on the record, certainly here on the broadcast, I talked to a lot of former cheerleaders, and off the record, a lot of them have signed NDAs, and they are very happy that Dan Snyder is no longer the owner of the Washington Commanders.
Well, anytime you're in a situation where you're an employee and there's an owner who's, particularly in professional sports, it's not like a public corporation, you know, they have a ton of power. And, you know, we saw a similar situation in Dallas with the president of the Mavericks, Tadema Ussuri, in terms of what happened with him previously. And so these things are not unprecedented in the world of sports. And I saw you with a kind of a gasp. What happened with Scottie Scheffler here?
I think, okay, I'm going to sound down in the studio, and we're live, people. I think Scottie Scheffler just holed out from the bunker to make the cut. If this is what I believe it is, Scotty Scheffler puts the arms.
No, he just missed. I think it'll hold. I just rolled off the hole.
Okay, but I believe he'll have this putt then.
Oh, yeah, it's like about a foot and a half putt.
Oh, my goodness, to make the cut because he would then get up and down. And the look on Scotty Scheffler's face is that of, oh, my goodness, I think I'm going to be around for the weekend. We'll figure out. Remember, his live number, it's going to change now if he does make birdie. But you could have gotten Scotty Scheffler 5 minutes ago at 180-1. I'm not saying he's going to come back from 13 down here in Malshaw to win this tournament, but you just don't see that number on a guy like Scotty Scheffler. We're going to talk a lot about this over the next 3 hours, how to handicap this going forward, because you almost have to take Brian Harman out of the equation. He's the outlier at 10 under par. And Tommy Fleetwood's getting ready to finish this round. He's 5 under. Really, to me, that's the line.
Yeah.
You really go, Scotty Scheffler could be 8 back of Tommy Fleetwood, and then you have to assume in the handicap that Brian Harman doesn't run away with this golf tournament. And then if you've got Scotty Scheffler over 100-1 at one fit, that becomes a flyer play that I think you might want to have in pocket if the number one player in the world, the conditions people, I'm not a meteorologist, they're going to get really dicey over the next 2 days over there in England. And the best players tend to play better in the worst conditions. So we'll look at his live number. Again, if he can make birdie here in 18, he'll be around for the weekend. And by the way, that number, it was 180-1 when we came on the air. Guess what it is now? 80-1. That's how quickly one shot by Scotty Scheffler, it looks like that he'll be around for the weekend, just adjusted the odds market that dramatically in real time.
Was that Adam Scott who just missed that putt?
Yes.
He deserves to miss that putt just based on the way he holds the putter.
UNLV's finest.
Is he from UNLV?
Went there for like a semester.
He did?
Highly debated, yes.
Wait. Highly debated?
So the people that I, like my dad worked at UNLV for over 20 years. They're like, yeah, he never played at UNLV. He just went
so you can't count him as a running rebel?
Well, running rebels, basketball. Can't do that. It's just a rebel.
What would it be for golf? The golfing rebels?
No. Yeah, Rebels.
Maybe just Rebels. Rebels. Yeah. Did win a national championship in 98.
By the way, Adam Scott does make the cut. He made bogey in 18. This is not to disrespect the United States Open. I kid about the Open and the British Open. This is a true test. This is the best players in the world playing a brutally tough golf course, and it will extract the best player for 4 days, certainly over here. So when I look at Scotty Scheffler now, and again, he still has to make his little putt here to make sure he gets in because the cut line's still +3. Tommy Fleetwood trying to do the same thing to round out 18. Man, Amal, there are going to be a lot of ways to get at this betting market over the next 2 days. Tommy Fleetwood needs a small par save here, and he gets it. He'll go in at even par for the day, still 5 back of the lead. Live betting market for Fleetwood, about 4-1.
Well, let me ask you this. Brian Harman's sitting at -10 right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that's had two tremendous rounds, 67 and a 65. First of all, do you believe he can continue that? And then what's the point of demarcation for you in terms of who can catch up? Because you look at Jason Day right now, he's tied for fourth, which is overall there are 6 golfers within that range of Harman all the way down to Day at -3. I mean, what's your cutoff point in terms of what number somebody has or how many strokes somebody has to be within?
I got to tell you, I actually believe the cut line, +3. Going into the weekend, still.
13 shots.
Well, here's the thing. Again, I'm not looking at it as 13 shots. I'm looking at it as 8 shots. I'm looking at Tommy Fleetwood at 5 under as the real, no disrespect to Brian Harman, very good class player, not a pedigreed guy. Tommy Fleetwood is one of those guys, we've all been waiting for Tommy Fleetwood to win. I don't think Tommy Fleetwood, being an Englishman, playing in conditions he knows very well over the next 2 days versus the American, who might not be. He's good on these conditions we saw the first 2 days. The golf course will be completely different over the next 48 hours. So to me, I'm handicapping it as, can I expect Brian Harman to come back? And when I say come back, Amal, I don't think the winning score is going to be 5 under, but I think it could be 7.
That's fair. And I don't expect him to shoot a 67 and a 65. Harman did finish second at the U.S. Open in 2017. Mm-hmm. His best other finishes at the Open Championships were 6th last year, so not too bad there. And then, of course, the Masters, 12th in 2021, and at the PGA, 13th in 2017. So I get your point on Tommy Fleetwood, but I don't think Brian Harman is you know, that far from potentially breaking through when you look at what he was able to do. It's been in the past, but last year at the Open, finished sixth, so that's not too bad.
No question. I'm right there with you. This is a guy in Brian Harman that, you know, like if you're in golf leagues like I am, you go, wow, I'd like to have – he's normally sniffing around, doesn't close, hasn't closed. Right now, plus $1.40 if you want to hop on Brian Harman to win. So you go, wow, you're giving me Brian Harman plus money, 36 holes – and I got a 5-shot lead. Then you got Minwoo Lee, by the way, young player, Australian. And I loved him. I had mentioned this earlier on the network this week. I thought low Australian, no disrespect to Adam Scott and Cam Smith, Minwoo Lee would be a guy in play. Right now, he's 7 off the lead, okay? Sepp Straka, guy's won on tour this year, been around. He's at 4 under par, 6 off the lead. But again, I'm not looking at his, you have to go run down right now, Brian Harman. I think Harman could come back to the pack ever so slightly, and maybe that winning number that we're looking for come Sunday morning is around 6-7 under par. That's what I'm looking at.
That's fair. You know, it's just unfortunate the way it looks like right now, but we still have a long way to go tomorrow in terms of where the guys are going to be and what's going to play out. But and a 5-shot lead at this level, worst case scenario, unless he just goes off the rails, Harman should be at least have a 2-shot lead or 1-shot lead going
into
Sunday.
I think you're right. And again, 18, we'll talk a lot about it and certainly throughout the show today and across the network. 18 right now, par 5. We've seen, as Scotty Scheffler just made birdie, Brian Harman made eagle there. I saw a guy today, Tyrrell Hatton, take a 9 there. Brooks Koepka, take a 7 there. Scores all over the place on 18, a great finishing hole for a major championship. All right, Amal, when we come back, let's talk more NFL, getting into some prop markets there that we might find some value on. Just getting it started here on Sharp Money on Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
You want to get in on all the fantasy action, but sick of managing your roster, sick of player injuries ending your season? Well, with Best Ball and DraftKings, you get the best of your team all season long. This year, Best Ball and DraftKings is bigger than ever with $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes up for grabs. For a limited time, you can join DraftKings' largest Best Ball contest ever. Get your first entry back in DraftKings dollars as soon as the draft is finished. Act now before this offer will expire. So to start playing Best Ball, download the DraftKings app, use the code BESTBETS, enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest, snake draft your team for the entire season. Every week, you're going to automatically rack up points for all your top scores. No ads, drops, trades, or I should have played that guy instead of that guy. Teams with the most points by the end of the season are going to have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So what are you waiting for? Head over to DraftKings app, sign up with the code BESTBETS, and start playing best ball today. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued as 10 DK dollars. Age and eligibility restrictions to apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for all of said details. Back alongside Amal Shaw, Dave Ross here as we continue Sharp Money. Again, a little bit of a sweat now for me. Head-to-head, I told you about in the break. Cam Smith plus $1.50 against Scotty Scheffler. It looked like that was a walk in the park, Kazanski. Top Gun. And then Scheffler birdied 18 to make the cut on the number. Very relieved look. 80-1 right now. Scotty Scheffler to win this thing. So Cam Smith, as long as he doesn't have a disaster in 18, I got a 1-shot lead in that head-to-head them all. I want to get that one done. If you've got tickets on the Seattle Mariners, maybe to make the playoffs, this is a team we expected a lot of before the season. And Jared Kelnick's one of those guys they've been counting on. Of course, he came over in the Edwin Sugar Diaz trade with the Metropolitans a couple years ago. Looked like he was starting to round into shape, right? He was hitting 252, 11 homers in 90 games so far this season. Now, I use past tense because he gone. He kicked a water cooler, Maul, and now Kelnick, his services will no longer be required for a while in Seattle. I mean, I get it. Players are emotional. You're in the middle of a wild card run. What do you say to guys, Amal, like that if you're a skipper, if you're a GM? Like, dude, you're taking yourself out when we need you the most.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Right now, so far, 11 homers, 45 RBI. He did make an emotional apology to the team.
Oh, he did.
And so we'll see. I mean,
do we take that? That's good?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. It reminds me of when people go, well, you know, he took responsibility for it. I'm like, he still threw four picks. What difference does it make? I mean, who else is he going to blame?
That's the part that always gets me, right? Hey, my bad. No, yeah. No, we know.
No, exactly. Hey,
we know it's your bad.
Exactly.
You screwed up, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
So it looks like Kelenic, we'll see if they can, in his stead, make a run out west. How about to the east? Where right now, the O's are sitting atop the AL East after beating the slumping Rays. And boy, are they ever slumping. And all of a sudden, you look up in Tampa Bay at the beginning of the year, runaway freight train. They're going to win this division going away. Now they're a game back. It's amazing. They're 20 games over 500.
Yeah.
And right now, still to win the division, you get the O's at plus 230. The Rays, you got to lay $1.40, but that would have been 7-1. You'd have to lay, you know, $7 a month ago. Now all of a sudden it's down to $1.40. Has the bottom completely dropped out of the Rays?
Yeah, I think the Rays offense is a serious concern. I mean, yesterday they had some opportunities against Baltimore, couldn't capitalize on them. In the bottom of the 10th, Randy Arozarena comes up, runners on first and second, strikes out, then they wind up with a game-ending double play. I mean, just talk about missed chances, missed opportunities here. The Orioles scored three runs early, I think in the third inning, and that was basically it until the run in the 10th inning. So this is a missed opportunity for the Tampa Bay Rays yesterday.
When you look at this division in totality, so we mentioned the O's at plus 230, Rays still minus $1.40. Red Sox, Mets, that's going to be a big series, at least for wild card hopes, if those teams really have visions of making it as a wild card. Look at the Yankees. 9.5 games back, 3 games over, 22-1 to win the division. Is the division now up for grabs? Like, I don't know if they can come this far back. Look, you can get 50-1 if you really think the Sox can make a move. And the trade deadline's coming up August 1st. Somebody's making a move in this division. It's normally the Yankees. I wonder if the Sox could be a sneaky team to try to make a move here and say, if we can't get back in the division race, by the way, we're 8.5 games back, at least we can make a run for a wild card.
Yeah, absolutely. They're in a great position for the wild card. When you look at the standings right now in the American League, you see Boston is just 3 games back of Toronto, Houston. So those are 2 teams they can potentially catch. I just don't know if Boston's got enough pieces all together. Mm. When you look at Houston, you look at Toronto, I think right now the way the teams are constructed, those 2 teams are better. I mentioned Tampa Bay also now in the wild card because they are in second place in the American League. So for me, Dave, I get why Red Sox fans would want them to make a move, but I don't know if it's a prudent play.
By the way, that matchup today, we got Bradish going for the O's, and Eflin's going to go for the Rays. Right now, the Rays, $1.40 favorites in that one, that total sitting at 8. Do you feel like if you're the Rays, though, now, these games, like, I don't think they would be sweating these games a month ago in the end of July, these matchups head-to-head with the Orioles, but now they feel like, man, there really is more pressure on the Rays to get a win today and even this thing back up. All of a sudden, you go up 2-3 games with the Orioles, you get a little bit of a cushion there.
Well, Dave, to your point, if Baltimore wins this game today, I think Bradish is on the mound going against Eflin, good pitching matchup tonight, but it gives you a situation where now you're going to walk out of this series, worst-case scenario, break even. And if you can get one more on the weekend, assuming you win today, now you've won 2 games in the standings over them in that 4-game set. And I get we still have a ton of games to play. Right now, Baltimore, they have played, 96 games, and the Rays have played 100 games. So still a lot of time to go. But I got to tell you, these games do matter as you get down the stretch.
They do. And that head-to-head matchup with the O's and Rays feels like it's a little bit more important today than it might have been 2 weeks ago. And again, if you're the O's, is this just house money? They made a little move here. Yeah. You go out and get some pitching help from the A's. We know, again, when we look at buyers, when you try to really formulate a track plan to who's going to win the East now, because, again, this felt like it was a foregone conclusion a month into the season, and now it's anything but. So I don't know that the O's really want to upset the kind of the recipe they have with the farm system. The kids have played very well for them. But now I wonder if management goes, hey, we're in first place.
Yeah.
It's late July. The deadline's in just over a week. I wonder now that teams that we didn't think would be buyers could possibly be.
Yeah, no question. I think there's some swings in this. Right now, Milwaukee's a team you look at as a buyer. Philadelphia is a team that's a buyer.
Yep.
These are all teams that have a position where they can get into, at least in the postseason. They're in good shape. Baltimore, Tampa, these are teams that are buyers potentially. They're in contention, meaning that will they make a move or not remains to be seen. Toronto, same thing. I think you look at The big question mark for me is Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I think San Diego's got to start to sell.
Wow.
Because the Padres...
Just wave the flag?
Yeah, I think they're too far back. Even though Musgrove and Snell have pitched extremely well, I think it's time to move on from this season. I just don't think they're going to be able to make the push. You look at the rest of the Major League Baseball, the Angels, again, like I said, they have to be sellers. The New York Mets have to be sellers. Mm. What do you do if you're the New York Yankees?
And that's the question. You're 9.5 games back in the division. Mm-hmm. You're 3 games over the 500 mark. You're the Bronx Bombers. Like, you don't sell.
Correct.
They just don't do it, right? George Steinbrenner would be turning over in his grave if he thought that his son might considering selling pieces. It could be the end of Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman if they don't figure this out. And by the way, they got about a week to figure this thing out.
Well, they're 4 games back of the wild card, and Boston's in front of them for the wild card. And then, of course, the 3 teams I mentioned earlier, Tampa, Houston, and Toronto. But I got to tell you, there's just not a lot of hope for me with this Yankees team without Aaron Judge in the lineup. Judge has been the key catalyst for this team.
Yeah.
But without him, it just hasn't happened.
No, and again, it's a reason why, you know, he wins the MVP last year. I know people like give it to Shohei Ohtani every year. But it does show you the value.
Yeah.
MVP. It shows you the value of Aaron Judge. Not just the offenses, we know, but the defense as well, right? This is a guy that is that classic 5-tool guy that can run, hit for power, throw, everything. Great defensive player as well. So you're seeing what's happening without him. Now, they've got the Royals today. You got to lay $2 if you want to do that in the boogie down known as the Bronx. You can play it on the run line. You get it even money. Again, we talk about pressure for the Rays. These are kind of pressure games for the Yankees because you can't lose these to the Royals at home, no, if you're going to be taken seriously as at least a wild card contender.
Well, I think it's a good opportunity today. You got Clark Schmidt on the mound going up against Alec Marsh. Marsh has struggled this year. He's got almost a 1.5 whip, 5.4 ERA. But Schmidt hasn't been that much better in terms of a whip standpoint, 1.34. So Yankees on the run line minus 1.5 for even money. The one thing with this Kansas City team, the offense has been solid. But you look at them, 98 games played. They're 28-70.
Whoa.
I mean, this team is not good. They're winning about 28% of their games. Not the ideal number if you're a Kansas City Royals fan.
Yeah, it's it goes to show that right now, without Aaron Judge, that is not the same team. Okay, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we will get back to the NFL. But Cam Smith, Eagle 18. Let's go, Aussie! Aussie, Aussie up! Cash says plus $1.50 tickets in this head-to-head matchup with Scottie Scheffler. We'll talk about his live number later on in the program as well, because now they're finishing that second round in earnest, Amal. Bad weather coming in. Nobody gets more excited to watch golfers suffer than I do. That's the way I suffer out there in the course. You guys got to play in the muck and mire for the next 2 days. All right, NFL talk next when you come back with us right here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is already out, and our college football guide is coming out in just a couple of weeks. Only VSIN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. So sign up before the end of July, it's running out, and receive both guides and full VSIN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175, or sign up for a monthly subscription. Get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSIN has to help up your betting game. This offer does end on July 31st, so don't miss out on those preseason deals. Visit VSIN.com/subscribe to become a VSIN Pro subscriber today. A man who does yeoman's work, certainly when it comes to college football and beyond, is Amal Shaw to my right. Amal, I do want to talk some NFL with you, my friend, and I want to discuss a team that I've already got some numbers on in the futures market, and that would be the Seattle Seahawks. So you could have gotten, once the numbers came out, about over almost 5-1 to win the division, which
wow,
is
a good number.
Plus 425 is what I ended up landing on. Now, those numbers are long gone. So now you look at them, and there's a bunch of different ways. To miss the playoffs for this team is even money, which is interesting to me because I look at the conference as a whole, and I go, well, how do they miss the playoffs? Who's better than we expect, and how do the Seahawks come back to the pack? Remember, their defense was kind of the issue last year.
Right.
And yet, they had a lead at the end of the third quarter in San Francisco in the wild card game. Then the fourth quarter, everything went haywire, and San Francisco even ended up covering the number that day. What is the more likely outcome? Is this team really a challenger to San Francisco to win the division, or could they be maybe come back to the pack a little bit? Because last year, this time when we're talking, we thought they might be one of the worst teams in the entire league, and they were anything but.
Yeah, I'm not a believer in the Seattle Seahawks, so probably a biased opinion coming in here on the Hawks, but this is a team that went 9-8 last year, Dave. They get into the postseason, but remember, this is a team that beat the Rams and the Cardinals four times in those matchups. The 44% of your wins came against two teams that were completely in disarray. So, again, like I said, I don't understand the affinity for this team. I think their receiving core is going to be one of the top receiving cores in the NFL when you look at it. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and then, of course, the rookie Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the slot, who I think is going to be really tough to stop. Their defense is going to be improved, but in terms of winning this division, I just don't see it. San Francisco, to me, is still, from an offensive standpoint and defensive standpoint, one of the top and most talented teams in the NFL, despite the question marks at quarterback. You take away that, the other 21 players, they've got the best roster in football, and it's not even close.
I'm with you on that. Look at again, this is a 9-win team a year ago. I don't think anybody saw 9 wins coming this time last year. Russell Wilson, of course, just exited stage left. You didn't even know who the quarterback was going to be, whether it was going to be Geno Smith or Drew Locke. That was a conversation this time last year. Then Geno has, who saw that year coming from Geno, literally off the scrap heap of the NFL. Now he gets paid, right? Is there any concern that Geno reverts back to Jets Geno, or can we now confidently say, no, all that time of suffering has done him well, and now this last year is the truer sense of who Geno Smith actually is?
Yeah, to your point, his career quarterback rating elevated incredibly when he got to Seattle. 94.2, but in a very small sample size, just in 5 pass attempts in 2020, and then in 21, 103 rating, and then last year, 30 touchdowns, 11 INTs, 100.9. So did a tremendous job with 4,200 yards passing. Look, with the receiving core he has, I think it'll be tough to regress. He is in a great position. I don't know, Dave, how many receiving cores you would take over this one. I mean, this thing is elite.
It really does. And again, we know, I think the angst that people have when they look at Pete Carroll with his teams, they go, well, Pete's going to run the ball.
Well, I love their running back room.
Right? Like, their offense on paper, if the offensive line holds up, they should be able to score some points. So there's a lot of props out there associated with Geno. And certainly when you look at passing yards for a guy like Geno Smith this year, 3,900 in a hook. That over, minus -5, the under, minus -115. Passing touchdowns, 26.5. Basically even juice, minus -10 either way. Interceptions, 11.5. If you want to play the over, this is interesting. Plus $1.05 for over 11.5 picks. Now, you just mentioned it. That receiving core is really good, which means to me, you would think they'd have a lot of volume and opportunity for picks because Gina's going to want to get it to that talented wide receiving core.
No question about it. But you know what? I'm not concerned about him from a pick standpoint because I think he's not a guy that takes risky throws. He's pretty conservative in terms of his approach, so I think that's why you could see that number being a little bit lower. In terms of where he's at, I mentioned last year 30-11, sitting at 11.5 for the season in terms of INTs over. But I don't know. I just like with Metcalf, who's a tremendous talent. Tyler Lockett, very underappreciated and underrated. I don't know what it is up in Seattle. Dougie Baldwin, who's also underrated. I'm telling you, Dave. To me, the offensive rookie of the year is going to be one of two players: Jaxon Smith-Njigba of Seattle or Bryce Young of the Carolina Panthers.
Wow. You like Jaxon Smith that much?
I don't think there's going to be anybody that can cover him. He is such a great slot receiver and what he can do coming off the line. I read one scout said, he said, there's nobody that has the ability to get open with their quickness and their route running as well as he does in terms of what he's going to be doing.
Well, I want to look at the number on Jaxon Smith-Njigba to be the rookie of the year because he's going to have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Right. So there's no question about it when you look in that futures market here for rookie of the year. And I think you're right on that. He right now, he's got a really good chance to do just that. I guess the question is that means we believe in Geno Smith. We believe that this is the new Geno. 11 picks from a year ago. He's not going to revert.
Objection, counselor.
Bring it.
Because here's the thing. When you're throwing in the slot, you're throwing 6, 7, 8, 9 yard dump offs plays. I mean, this is a guy that can do things, run after the catch. I know we've got some statistics. I don't know if we have them in front of us or not. But in terms of Jackson Smith and Jigba catches.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're like me and if you think he's got a shot at Offensive Rookie of the Year, it's a pretty good bet in terms of going over on his total.
And 15-1 to win the Offensive Roy. Okay. So if you tell me.
For a DK, you asked Jackson Smith, the Jigba for receptions, mm-hmm. sitting at 57.5.
Okay. And again, 15-1 to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year. So there's your catch total. If he's, in your estimation, Amal, a guy that's really going to be a matchup nightmare because of the other guys, could he evolve into their number one by the end of the year? I mean, look, that's pretty heady when you look at DK Metcalf and you look at Lockett and you look at the guys that they already have that are already ahead of him. But it feels like he's going to get the target shares to Wyatt's point of that total maybe hitting the over and for rookie of the year at 15-1 because you think the target share will be there.
I absolutely do. You know, when you think about guys in that particular position where he's going to be, he's going to have an opportunity. You're talking about, 3.5 catches per game?
Mm-hmm.
I think his total yardage is about 700. To me, he's in a great position. I'm just surprised the number is as high as it is at 15-1. Can somebody please explain to me why Bijan Robinson is plus 275?
Well, because I think they feel like three down back in the ATL, he's going to be the guy that Arthur Smith just loads up the offense on. You mentioned why Jackson Smith and Jigba could be a good play because the other guys around it actually will make him more unguardable. Because they can't go get him. So 15-1 feels like it could be live because he's going to have a lot of single coverage with the other guys. The pure volume that Bijan, we anticipate him getting in the ATL is the reason why I think he's plus 275.
Well, first of all, here's the problem. Desmond Ridder is going to throw him a few bounce passes. Second, I just think that Jahmyr Gibbs is the guy who could be dangerous in this one. But to me, you got to look for guys who are going to be able to put up some stats. Who are guys that you think that could potentially put up some stats? I'll give you a name. I don't play fantasy football, but I don't think he's going to be an Offensive Rookie of the Year kind of guy. But a guy with tremendous, tremendous speed that people may not have been aware of coming out of college if they didn't watch Texas A&M, Devin Achane.
Yeah.
This kid can flat out fly. We'll see how effective he is in terms of running the football with the Miami Dolphins, but I think he'll have some opportunities. I like what he can do. This is intriguing. I'll tell you one thing. We know Jordan Addison is fast in a car. I don't know if he's necessarily as fast on the football field. He didn't have that elite speed at USC or Pittsburgh.
17-1 for Jordan Addison in Minnesota if he can stay on the field here and not get tickets up and down.
For people that are unaware, he was going 140 miles an hour.
Where are you going?
In a 55.
Just slow it down, Jordan. You're young. We've seen, God forbid, we've seen mistakes made in cars by young athletes all the time. Not a good way to go. Very quickly, before we end this segment, Pete Carroll's 71 years young, 25-1 to win Coach of the Year. Is Pete Carroll in? Could he possibly, if they won this division, that's the context it would have to take in order for him to be in this conversation?
It would, but I think based on the success last year, it becomes harder for him. To me, you know, I'm not a big fan of this betting market, the Coach of the Year odds. Mm-hmm. It's such a crapshoot. Here's what I don't get. Dan Campbell's plus 850. That team is expected to have a good year and potentially win the division. I do like Sean Payton at 9-1, even though it's a little bit short, if you believe Denver's going to be good. I just don't think the Broncos are going to be particularly good. If Atlanta's good with Arthur Smith, there's another one. I'm looking for a team that's a non-playoff qualifier that's got an opportunity to potentially make the postseason.
I'm telling you, man, Pete Carroll should have won it last year when the expectations were zero, and he made them all the way into a 9-win team that got to the postseason, 25-1 to get that award this year. Okay, when we come back, Wes Reynolds, let's talk all things British Open next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app today. New customers can bet just $5 and get $150 in bonus money instantly by using the promo code VSIN. That's VSIN when you sign up today. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for all the terms and conditions. Back alongside Amal Shaw, Dave Ross here, continuing this edition of Sharp Money from South Point Casino and Hotel in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. You know, whenever we have Wes Reynolds on, we're going to talk a lot of golf. Co-host, of course, of VSiN Tonight and Long Shots. Follow him on Twitter as I do at Wes Reynolds 1. Wes, I'm just sitting here with Amal during the break going, my goodness, I'm looking at some of these long shot numbers now of pedigreed players who find themselves just inside the cut line. I guess the short, quick question to you is, if Brian Harman runs away with this thing, you tip your cap. Is this a one-horse race in that if he doesn't come back, a five-shot lead going to the weekend, what do you make of Brian Harman's chances at plus money, plus $1.40 right now to close this thing out?
Yeah, Dave, look, the trend tells you that Brian Harman should be able to close the deal just based on what you've seen when you've seen these big leads in majors. I believe, five-shot lead is what he has. Last player to lead the Open by five was Louis Oosthuizen in 2010, and he went on to win. So more often than not, you don't see that kind of comeback in a major. But this is Brian Harman. I think this is his first time with that big of a lead. Now, he has had the lead at a major before. That was 2017 at the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, which you remember Brooks Koepka ended up winning by four shots, and Brian Harman settled for T2. Brian Harman and Tommy Fleetwood, by the way, were the top two going into Sunday at Erin Hills. So maybe Erin Hills was the course correlation and not all these other links courses that we saw. But, you know, the fact that he's plus 140 suggests that maybe the market still thinks that he can be taken on here a little bit. I'm seeing plus 150 at DraftKings. And the thing about Harman, too, maybe for casual golf fans, but regular golf bettors that follow this every week know who he is. He has won a couple times on the PGA Tour. Not a very big hitter, but hits it dead straight. Has had some good form, actually, coming in. Had a T2 a few weeks ago at Hartford at the Travelers Championship. And he's just one of those players that are boilerplate, good PGA Tour players that give you like five or six top tens a year, maybe contends once or twice a year at a regular PGA Tour event. But this is different territory here. So Brian Harman, 10 under par. Tommy Fleetwood, though, and that tells you how well Tommy Fleetwood was back going into this tournament. Only 4-1. And five strokes back, of course, this is a home game for Tommy. He was raised in Merseyside County over there in England. So certainly going to have a lot of fan support. So Brian Harman certainly probably going to have the crowd against him on the weekend in the final group.
By the way, first of all, I want you to hold out hope if you are five strokes back, because you can always think of John Vandeveld in 1999. I mean, hell, if you're within three shots of the 18th, you're okay.
That led to Peter Alice saying, somebody wash him down with a fine brandy and get him a drink, because it was just the ultimate collapse.
It was funny, Wes, before you came on, I asked Dave, where is kind of the point of demarcation for you in terms of guys who could be in contention? We still have 36 holes to play. Give me some names that you might consider outside of Fleetwood as a possibility here that you could consider taking a shot on, or is it nobody? Is this kind of a two-horse race for you between Harman and Fleetwood?
Well, I certainly hope it's not. My nearest pursuer is actually Jason Day, who I took at 110-1, now 18-1. He finishes at 3-under, and I think that he could play well on the weekend, and one of the reasons I liked him is because of the low ball flight he has off the tee, and obviously the wind did pick up this afternoon at Royal Liverpool. So, you know, lower ball flight, you're going to be less affected by the wind. So I hope it's not a two-horse race necessarily. But I think if I'm going downwards, Jamal, maybe the last guy that I would even give a chance, and certainly the market given a chance, is Rory McIlroy. And not because of where his number is, because he's Rory McIlroy. So I don't think all the other guys that won under par necessarily have the same chance. But you know, I think you probably at least want to be on that first page, 3-under, maybe 2-under. I think if you're getting down to, like, the guys that barely made it on the number, like the guys that actually made it right on the number, Brooks Koepka, Scottie Scheffler, Patrick Cantlay, Ricky Fowler, those guys are way too far back, 13 shots back. Even if the wind totally turns this upside down, I don't see it. So, yeah, you probably cannot go further in terms of an in-play price. I'm just looking here. Rory, 10-1. Spieth, 16-1. Strachadey and Minwoo Lee, 18-1. I think that's about as far down as you could go on an in-play outright.
Well, listen, Tommy Fleetwood can draw on the fact that he's from Merseyside. Liverpool was down against Barcelona, 3 goals. They came back on Merseyside. So all I'm saying, it's not over for the Englishman.
No, I mean, we saw him tweet out after the round yesterday how much he appreciated the fan support. He's like, I'm going to need you all weekend. No disrespect to Brian Harman. It's going to be, as Wes said, it's a home game for Fleets here, British Jesus. Let's see if he can get it done. Look, I'm not a weathercaster, Wes, but you know I'm fascinated, and I always look to see, certainly over here in an Open Championship, what the weather looks like. It looks like on paper, and I heard Zinger say it on the broadcast, 100% chance of rain. Not 98, 100. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get those winds you talked about. We're going to get the rain. Is this going to be a completely different golf course over the next 2 days that Brian Harman has not seen in the first two?
Yeah, look, it might soften it up a little bit because this is designed to play a lot firmer. And one of the reasons I think you see Brian Harman near the top of the leaderboard is because you have to be accurate here. Distance, you know, distance is never necessarily a disadvantage, but you see, you know, and you've seen in past history here at Royal Liverpool, if you remember Tiger back in 06 when he won the major immediately after his father passed away, he never hit driver. I think he hit driver one time. He hit two iron. And you're seeing a lot of these guys that'll club down that aren't necessarily hitting drivers. They're hitting three metal. They're hitting five woods or seven woods or two or three irons off the tee. And they're clubbing down because you don't necessarily have to take driver here. So that's good for Brian Harman because he's at a disadvantage with his lack of distance. But the fact that he's just dead accurate. I mean, nobody hits more fairways than this guy. He just always keeps it in play. And that was kind of the secret when I wrote up the column at VSiN.com. I said, the key, you got to keep the ball in play. You can't hit it in the fescue. You can't hit it in the bush. You can't hit it in these deep bunkers. You guys have probably watched it over the last couple of days. It is hard to get out of these bunkers here. I mean, even John Rahm, top player, having to play backwards out of the bunker, you know, instead of hitting it toward the green just because it's so hard to get out of it depending on where you're positioned.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm watching these guys in the bunker. It's a shot penalty if you get in them. It's going to be penal. That's the way it's supposed to be in golf. You get in a hazard, it's supposed to be hazardous.
Yeah.
And it's been that way.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. We saw Scheffler hit that terrific shot to be able to make the cut line. Oof. That was a tremendous shot out of the bunker, Wes. I don't know if you saw that one. But overall, who's been the biggest disappointment so far for you in this tournament?
Yeah, look, there have been a few. There's always a couple that miss the cut. Not guys that I pick necessarily, but Justin Thomas and DJ, obviously shooting double digits over par. You know, they miss the cut. Justin Rose misses the cut. Shane Lowry. Those were guys that are Europeans that you thought might play well in the Open Championship. Certainly have in the past. And Lowry's case, he won it a couple years ago on a very similar course at Royal Portrush. But you know, another disappointing major for Patrick Cantlay. Mm-hmm. This guy's number four in the world, and he's just never in the mix in a major. But he always gets, like, those backdoor top 20 or top 10 finishes at a major. I call them, like, Wikipedia finishes because you look when you're doing research, and it's like, oh, man, top 10, or he was T6. But it doesn't indicate maybe that he had to shoot like 66 on Sunday to backdoor his way into that. So Patrick Cantlay, another disappointment. Xander Schauffele, I think he makes the cut on the number. These are guys that are top 10 players, and you know they have the games to win majors, but they just have not gotten it done, and this is going to be another one, which is a missed opportunity.
All right, Wes, I know where you said you're not going to go too far down for long shots to come through, but Scottie Scheffler, as I'm all referred to, he had to get up and down for birdie on 18 just to make the cut. He had this relieved look on his face. He went from 180 to 1 when he was sitting outside the cut line to 90 to 1 as we stand right now to still win this thing. The other guy is the reigning defending champion, Cam Smith. He eagles 18 to get to 2 over, and you can get him at 130 to 1. Is there any sense that these guys are like, now that I'm in, you're going to really regret it because I'm going to turn up the heat on the weekend?
Well, we've seen all year with Scottie Scheffler when he looks like he's out of it, he rallies on Sunday. I mean, he was in the leader in the clubhouse for a couple hours at the Memorial when he was several shots back that Victor Hovland ended up winning in a playoff. But the way I might play these guys down the board, if you have access to DraftKings and some other shops I'm sure are doing it too, is like a live top 10. You look at Scottie Scheffler, and I think he's been cut actually since I looked at it last. He was like 4-1 to finish top 10.
Ooh.
In play. So maybe it's a big ask, you know, to come back 13 shots off the base. You need the leader to stumble, and then you need to play very well. So you need both things to happen. But I would be looking at those guys as maybe like live top 10 anywhere 3 or 4 to 1 because somebody's going to come from the pack like they always do on Sunday and shoot a low round and find their way in the top 10.
I'm picking up what you're putting down there. I think that's a great way to handicap some of those guys that just snuck in on the number. Hey, Wes, always appreciate the conversation, my friend. Enjoy the rest of the Open Championship.
You guys. Thanks for having
Thank
me.
You.
There he is, everybody. When we come back, hour number two, let's talk a lot more NFL. Just getting it cranked up. Sharp Money here on VSiN.